everyone. My name is Tony Blankenship, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 11th of 1998. My home group is called an AA group. We meet in Santa Fe, New Mexico on Monday night at 7 o'clock at the Salvation Army, where sometimes it still smells like an alcoholic, you know? It's like that odd smell of, like, Pine Sol and leftover vodka. It's awesome. And sometimes people will, like, share. And I mean, those are, like, the best shares, the guys that are drunk still. And I think that's the safest place to come is Alcoholics Anonymous if you're still drinking. So I did that a lot. So I'm supposed to talk about, it's funny, Jeff asked me to speak, so go talk to him. Anyway, he asked me outside yesterday, he said, he goes, well, you have a lot of good experience with the third step, right? I'm like, I've done it. Like, I don't know. What does that mean? I've had a lot of good experience. It's interesting. I don't know why I thought of this. I woke up this morning and I was thinking right away about what I was going to say. And I told Erica I wanted to be the last person to share because I wanted to look like the most spiritual person on the panel. I wish I was kidding. Like, I'm not. Like, I'm just, that stuff goes through my mind. I really want to look spiritual for people. I don't want to actually do anything spiritual, but I want to look spiritual. And the interesting thing is, like, so this third step says we made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And like, well, why would I want to do that? Like, what's the point? Like, why would I even want to do that? And what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? And there's a part in the doctor's opinion, and I'll talk to you later about my opinion about the doctor's opinion. But he wasn't an alcoholic. But he says something in there that was really interesting about something else, about a guy who's a person who's a psychopath, right? And I looked up that word, and it says someone who has the inability to learn from experience. And below that, it says, you know, he makes many resolutions but never a decision. Right? And that's my experience with step three. Over and over and over and over again, I'll make a resolution that, okay, now, right now, all right, I'm going to do this, this, and it's like somebody shared this the other day about making Tom said that, you know, I'm going to make a bargain with God. So I'll make a resolution that I'm going to change, and I'm going to do this. But I don't know that I don't have the power to do it. I don't know it. I don't know it until I get beaten down one more time again by my self-will that I don't even think I have. I'm doing good. I prayed. I meditated today. I'm good. Like, I'm running through life. I'm trying not to hurt people. And, you know, and all throughout my day, I'm trying to arrange things to suit me so I feel comfortable. And I feel safe. And I don't even know it. I don't even know it. I'm asleep to it. It says somewhere in there, and I don't, whatever. Something about, like, we had to be convinced that any life on self-will could hardly be a success. But what I'm not. I'm still not. I've been sober almost 15 years, and I'm not convinced, because I still do it all the time. All the time. I try to arrange it so it's going to make me comfortable and make me okay. Even meetings. You go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't share right. Like, you know? And you know who they are. You know, and we come here, and we're like, they don't do it right. We do it right. Like, okay. Whatever. I mean, and I get that. I mean, I still think that way sometimes, but I don't know where that came from. Sorry. I did pray. One of the most important things, I think, every time I do a third step, I call my sponsor, and he lives in Denver, and so a lot of times we're doing step work, it's on the phone. And we'll do this third step prayer together, and I don't know. I've never been a person who'd done a third step prayer and had this amazing bright light experience. It's never been my experience. There's a little paragraph after the prayer, though. It says something to the effect of, you know, your own language, right? Your own, you know, it says the wording was, of course, quite optional. That's what it says. And so every time I do it and every time I do it with someone else, I think it's important that I go out by myself, somewhere where I feel safe and feel good. And, you know, for me, a lot of times that's in the woods because I'm a mountain biker. So I like being out and doing stuff like that. And I just have a talk. Like it says expressing these things that we, something like that, you know. And I just tell God, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to live this way. And you know what? And when I say it, I mean it. I do. I mean it. And I think that's really important. There's another thing that goes on. It says that, you know, what I think, and I shared this before yesterday, was that I could have all the, you know, I got great philosophies. I'll tell you, they're great. I got all kinds of principles that I want to live by and actions that I don't want to do. I got all kinds of just great, and just ask me. I'll tell you, they're great. I can't do them. And though it says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it's vital, it's life-giving, right? That's vital. Crucial, like I have to make this decision. And it's not something that's made lightly, I think, where they used to say that in AA, right? Like, well, there's three frogs and they're sitting on a log. You guys remember that? And one of them makes a decision. How many frogs are left? I don't know why I turned into a southerner when I told that joke. Sounds like a joke you tell in the South. How many frogs are left? Well, three. That's not true. Because if I make a decision to jump, I got to jump. I got to jump. I believe three is an action step. It's not a mental step. It's like that word decision comes from a word with Latin, which literally means to cut. So I have to, what am I cutting out of my life? What am I willing to let go to make this decision? What am I willing to go with? And if I'm not following it up like right away with some inventory, that decision doesn't mean anything. Because I did lots of, every time I went to jail, I made a decision. Every time. I got baptized a couple of times. Like, I meant that. Like, I was bawling. I mean, I had the, like, spirit just crying. I felt it in my heart. And I walked out of that church and was like, and went and got something to drink. Because I didn't want to let go of something. I didn't want to do that. Have I only been talking 7 minutes? That is so awesome. I love that. I'm usually pretty long-winded. That's true. I'm going to read this. So this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I still don't believe it. Because I still do it. Not all the time, not all day, not 24 hours, but in the places that I want to feel power, I do it. I do it. I'll tell you all about it. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. That's one who does business for another. So it's not that God does give us power, right? God gives us power. I have God-given power. It is my responsibility to go be an agent for God. I may be the only example of a spiritual life someone gets to see, and I can either be a good example or a bad one. That's it. And a lot of times I'm a bad one. I wish I wasn't. He is the Father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass through freedom. If you had a better speaker, they could tell you all about all the arch and the cornerstone and the keystone, and I don't care. I wish I did. I just don't. These are the third set promises. In case you were wondering, there are promises in each step. I believe that. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. And I don't believe it. I believe the country club where I work is my employer. That paycheck's my employer. That attention I get from you or from her or from my boss or from whatever, you're my employer. You're what makes me okay, right? And every time you say, Tony, you're okay, and I go, no, I'm not. I don't believe it. And it's like, my sponsor said, well, why don't you go to God for that? And I'm like, I am. No, you're not. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. I'm still sort of waiting for that to happen. Our little plans and designs, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, and that has happened to me, and we have enjoyed peace of mind. Yeah. I lost my place, Jeff. Thanks. As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. That has happened to me. And we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Thank you.
All right, our next panelist will be Melina A. from a Really Works group in Aurora, Colorado.
Hi, I'm Malia, a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I very much am afraid of public speaking. I've already started crying today, so we're going to see how this works. But when I was asked to speak, I was a little bit in shock, and I just feel incredibly humbled that anyone would want to know what I thought or knew about this book, because most of everything that I know about this book I learned here at this conference, and so we'll see what we can do. As far as adding to this conversation, I can tell you how I've worked this step, and see what happens, right? When I came into this program, I was broken and I was feral, and I was suicidal, I was homicidal, I was behaving very badly, and the possibility of me dying was becoming really quite apparent. I hear a lot of times in Al-Anon meetings that we're people pleasers, and I just recently, in part studying the step, and I just suddenly found it somewhere, is I don't believe I'm a people pleaser. I am an approval sucker. I might be nice to you, but it's not because I like you. And it is because I am selfish and self-seeking. And I found that before I got here, I would give my power, or instead of looking for God and asking for his help, I would rely on people a lot of the time. A lot of the time it was my alcoholic or addict. Sometimes it was other people in my life. And the first time I worked this step with my sponsor, I did it very gingerly. I heard... I can't, they say he can, and maybe I should let him, and that's how I did it. I'm like, I can't, all these thousands of people say he can, and I will give him this one little tiny piece at a time. I use the God box a lot, and that was enough to get started. My sponsor actually had me do a couple of inventories so that I could go back again to the third step and get a better footing. I inventoried my father, and I inventoried myself, and then I inventoried God to find out what my part was in my relationship with a higher power. And I found out that I was selfish and self-seeking, that I didn't trust that he cared for me and was looking out for me, despite the evidence. And I needed to distinguish between what people say about God, what churches say about God, different faiths say about God, and what actually was happening in my life. The fact that I was protected many times even when I didn't believe that he was there for me. And so, you know, I came back to the third step and tried again. And I'll give a little bit more this time. And that got a little bit better. As I read this chapter now, this section on the third step over and over again in preparation for this, because I was just super nervous. And I find it's funny, because it's like it comes to the conclusion that we're selfish and self-centered, that we are the root of our own troubles, and we apparently are supposed to figure this out before doing the inventory. And I'm like, wow, I didn't notice that. A lot of things in this book I sometimes think are backwards, but I mean, I guess if I didn't notice it, it wasn't that important at the time. But I did have to realize that my life was spinning out of control and I was going to die before I decided, you know, could make the decision to turn my will and my lives over to the care of God. I proceeded through the steps. I know that a lot of people, and I certainly did this for a period of time, you know, we do that 1-2-3 waltz. And today I honestly believe that if, you know, if I'm doing a 1-2-3 waltz, that I haven't actually taken the third step. Because proof of the third step is taking a fourth step and proceeding with the rest of the steps. You know, that it's not just making a decision, it's making a decision and following through with it. And you know, I'd like to say, you know, I'll kid about it, is that, you know, making a decision is not me going and joining a nunnery. And I have a friend who like, the worst place they can imagine being sent to if they're, you know, forced to do something because of God's will, is that they're just like, please, God, don't send me to Africa. And it's not that either. It's bringing, you know, my will and my lives, you know, in line with God. That I want what he wants. I want what he wants for me. You know? It might involve joining a nunnery. I don't know. That might happen still. But I found out, like, I was already into my fifth step when I flunked my third step. And I was tremendously grateful that, you know, that we're not being graded, and that, you know, if I'm screwing these up, then I get to go back and start over to the one before it. And I found that I had been relying on some of my friends instead of my God. And just like I had done with the alcoholic, you know. And so I had to, you know, go back and make that decision again. Which isn't such a bad thing, really. Today I understand that my higher power wants great and wonderful things for me. And if I can continue to remind myself of all of the good things that he's given me, you know, I'm going to be, you know, I won't be all upset about, like, but I don't want to. Because I've already been given so many things that I could not have possibly imagined. Everything about the way this is written I think is backwards, but where it tells me that I should take this spiritual step with someone who's understanding after I just said the prayer, and but that's okay. I'm you know, if it weren't written like this, we wouldn't spend so much time studying it. I'm sure we would have gone, oh, I already read that, so. One of the things that, last year you might have seen me here, my hair was kind of messed up, as it usually is, and I spent a lot of time crying. I was very distraught over the things that happened at the theater in Aurora. And I came to this conference and found myself back on step two. So I find that it's somehow appropriate that this week, and I'm here on step three. And you know, if I can find that there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity, then what else am I going to do but give my life and my will over to him? It's really not that scary. Before I got here, I didn't have a life. I can't go back to that. I was going to die, and you know, I can go back to that, and I'll die. And I need to remind myself of that frequently, that this book was also written for me. I believe it says so on page 18. And alcohol is but a symptom. And when I wake up in the morning, my first instinct is to be a horrible human being. And today, you know, I have to pray to get over that. And that's something I learned here last year. And it works. So it's so important to do this work. If you haven't done it already, I would encourage you to do that. So thank you very much.
Our next panelist will be Meg C. from Greenlight Tuesday in Denver, Colorado.
I'm Meg. I'm an alcoholic. Greenlight is my home group. We meet in Denver on Tuesday at 7:30 at between 13th and 14th on Washington Street. And we even meet at Panera before because we believe in fellowship. And suddenly lightheaded. There's not enough air up here. I have experience with the third step, and I have experience with it through a sponsor. And I have experience feeling absolutely empty inside when I was drinking. I was raised a Catholic, and I was raised that men were, you know, in power. And I remember being in church and being like, I wanna be a priest. And they're like, but you can't. And I was like, what? Why can't I? Like, what is my role? And like, so I always feel like I've had some pull to some sort of spirituality. And I was anxious. I was so anxious as a child. And when I discovered alcohol and how calming it was and how awesome I could feel by putting alcohol in me, it ate a hole in me, and the person that wanted to be a priest no longer was there, and the person that was trying to be good and, you know, do the Girl Scout thing and go into and see old people in nursing homes just disappeared. And I was self-centered and self-will run riot. The way that I drank, you'd never want to be around me. And people ask me, they're like, why don't you drink? Because they know the person that I am now. And I'm like, you don't want to know that girl. That girl is going to, you know, steal your wallet, help you look for it, steal your boyfriend, you know, drown your sorrows with you, outdrink you, and continue on my merry way without even thinking about it. And there's a spider on the table, and now all I can think is that the spider is all over my body. I'm sorry. It's like I just itch. But I couldn't kill it because I didn't want to make it rain for you guys. And I still have a squirrel brain. Like, I still have the squirrel brain that gets so distracted when I'm sober. And so when I got sober, I had the sponsor that was like, you're going to greet. And I was like, no, I'm not. And she's like, you say yes to everything I say. I was like, I'll greet. You know, and I stood in a basement of a church in a really shady neighborhood in Boston. And I said, welcome. Welcome to Cambridge, young people. And I met a lot of people. And by having that willingness and by showing her that I was willing to do that, we continued on those steps. And so I was powerless over alcohol. And so I was left without a power. And what was I going to do about that? And in step two, I found out that I was insane. I didn't really know that. But it made sense in hindsight. It made sense that I was insane with the way that I put alcohol in my body. And when I got to step three, there was this red book. And, you know, I flipped through it and I read it, and it didn't really work for me. And my sponsor's like, well, you're going to memorize this prayer, and we're going to get down on our knees, and we're going to hold hands, and we're going to say this prayer. And I was like, that sounds weird. You guys are weird. Like, I was weirded out from the beginning with how nice everybody was, all the phone numbers I got, the people that were willing to show me where the next meeting was, and that I was going to kneel with my sponsor and hold hands was just bizarre. And so I did it because I had no other options. I was told by people, they were like, you're not an alcoholic. You know, you might have had a bad weekend. You might have had a bad time. And I'm like, I've been having bad weekends for about 6 years. And I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. And so when I was offered this way of life, I just jumped in, and it wasn't, well, maybe, or no, I'm not going to do it the way that you tell me. I was just stupid enough to do what people asked me to do. And I was just willing enough to get down on my knees. And so we met up at this church. I think it was a Saturday afternoon. And it was this big, beautiful church with this stained glass. And it looked just like the church that I had grown up in. And they were getting, communion was ending, first communion was ending. And all these little girls are running around in their white dresses. And I was reminded of what I was like as a child. And we sat in the back corner of the church. And she's like, you ready? And we held hands. And we got down on our knees. And we said the third step prayer. And that was it. Like, that was it. And nothing changed, but everything changed at the same time. And I walked outside the church, and you walk down the 20 stairs to the, you know, to the street. And she's like, we're going to meet in a week, and you're going to bring your big book and a notebook, and you're going to start writing. And I was aware that by doing the third step, I was getting ready to do everything else. It was a commitment for me to continue on with the work. And it was just really interesting to leave and to notice how the sun was shining. And there was the serenity that I've gotten in sobriety is directly related to how spiritually fit I can feel. And it's not related to, and I started to feel that sense of ease and comfort at that point. And I started to feel that little bit of, okay, everything's going to be okay. And I've realized in hindsight that when I got sober, I've actually found the serenity that I was looking for in the bottom of that glass. Every time I emptied it, and every time the voices quieted down about how awful I was or what a piece of, you know, something I was, I felt a little bit better, and I felt a little bit more comfortable in my skin when I was drinking. And I found that I can have that all the time without drinking. And I found that that's easily accessible to me, you know, as long as I'm maintaining my spiritual program. And I've had the opportunity to sponsor other women, and I've had the opportunity to do third steps in different places, and they never look the same way. And if you haven't had the opportunity to share your experience, get through that work and share it with another alcoholic, because it's just amazing to, again, get down on your knees. I've gotten down on my knees and held hands with a girl in a park that was behind my house, in the church that shady meeting was at, in a park by my new home here in Denver, and in Colorado. We're not in Denver anymore. And it's just interesting, like, what it means to everybody and what everybody comes in looking for. And I use that third step prayer every morning. And I don't wake up mindful, and I don't wake up spiritual, and I don't wake up knowing what to do every day. But I automatically, because I've just created a habit, I automatically just go into that third step. And at some points I get lost in the wording. Like, I'll be walking and I'll be saying the step, and I'm like, where am I? And I just go back to the beginning, and I get as far as I get, and then eventually I make it through. And it's the easiest way to initiate my meditation. When I was reviewing the third step last night, I was thinking about the actor, and I was thinking about how I like to control a lot of things And people that know me know that I like to control things. I walked into orientation. I teach body mechanics at the hospital, and I walk in and I was like, stand up. And I was like, sorry, guys, I tell people what to do all the time, but stand up anyway, let's stretch. And I continued on with that. And I'm just this force of self-will if I'm not looking for the opportunity. And I ask God every morning in my meditation that I may be the woman that he wants me to be, that I can see what he wants me to see and be the woman that he needs me to be and find the newcomer that may not know that alcoholism isn't a solution anymore. And I have many opportunities to be, you know, a spiritual being. And sometimes I fail, and sometimes I need to go back and restart again. And the other day, I had some jerk, you know, make me cry by 8:30 in the morning. And I, like, went in the bathroom, and I was like, okay, are we going to do that again, or can we redo it? And sometimes I just have to make it to the end of the day and put my head on the pillow and wait for another day to, like, be better at this. And it's just about the willingness for me. Willingness is the key to finding the solution and finding my serenity again and again and again, because it's not a natural state for me. And so if you're new and you're just starting out, or you're just trying to work on the third step, just try. And I love newcomers that are like, I'm just letting go and letting God. And I'm like, okay, good luck. Continue to come to meetings, continue to talk to your sponsor, and continue to go through this step, so that hopefully years and years later was my experience that I found that serenity. But I had glimmers of it for a little while. And so if you haven't found that, continue to work. It's totally worthwhile. And I'm glad I'm here. Thanks for listening.
Right. Our next panelist is Erica M. from the Full Measures Group in Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Hi, everybody. Erica Maynard, alcoholic. Sobriety date, December 30th, 1996. Home group, Full Measures Speaker Group in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, actually. That's okay. We're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from Cedar Falls. Grateful to be here. Grateful to be asked to share anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous. I only have 10 minutes, so I got to talk fast because there's a lot to say. I love it that our book says that we're at step three twice, because that's just how I am. They tell us we're at step three, and then they tell us what the opposite of step three looks like, right? The actor who wants to run the whole show. I have a lot of experience with that. They tell us on page 62, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. I had an experience at 6 months sober where I was stepless, hadn't worked any steps. I had a sponsor, but she thought I needed time, you know, work the steps. It's the path to the solution. And don't wait for some magical time period to pass, please. Because I was nuts, and I was trying to do what you said to do, and because I'd had a first step experience at 2 months sober where I saw that I had never had a couple drinks, and for me a couple is six or eight. So if I could just drink six or eight, I'd probably still be drinking, but I don't stop at six or eight. And so my first step was really solidly in place at 25 years old, because I saw that I had what you old people had, the same illness, and that I would never beat it. And but I had an experience at 6 months sober. My son was 3.5. I was a single mom, and I put a little bowl of food in front of him, and he threw the food, and it landed, you know, bowled side down, and something happened to me when that happened, and this rage welled up inside of me. And I slapped him so hard that he fell off his chair. And he had a red mark on his face. And that's Erica without a higher power. But my higher power was with me, because something happened to me. And I was in the present moment. And I didn't make excuses for my behavior. And I saw my kid, and I looked at him crying, looking up at me with those red eyes, and looking at me like, what's happening, you know, what, you know, and I realized that there was nothing that that little baby could have done that could have caused that rage in me, that that rage had always been with me, always, my whole life. My troubles arise out of myself. He is not the problem with me. I am the problem with me. AA, three words or less. It's not them. Really. Like, really, it's not. Doesn't mean I don't think you are at time to time. I mean, sometimes I'm convinced. I mean, I could get a petition signed. I mean, I could get a posse, and I could get you on my side, and... Left unchecked, I'll burn my life to the ground sober. Left unchecked, left unsponsored, sponsoring myself. The third step says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Turn my will and my life. I think that's a thing that I have to practice. And how do you know if you did the third step? Will you complete 4 through 9, right? Well, and then you have to do 10, because you take what you awaken with in 4 through 9 into 10, and you take that into 11, and then you carry that into 12. So isn't it really 4 through 12? And then isn't it really 1 through 12? Because every time I do 10, I'm doing 1 through 9. So isn't it really all pointing towards the third step? All pointing towards aligning my will with God's will? God cannot save me from what I want, though. God cannot save me from what I want. He'll let me do what I want to do. So I get to ask myself, when I notice I'm in self, because I don't notice sometimes a couple minutes, sometimes a couple hours. I'm in self. I'm in fear. Sometimes I don't notice. When I notice, that's my point of power. Because I have a choice at that point to go on to the bitter end and do what I want, proceeding to live backwards, which is EVIL, to myself. I thought it was you destroying me. I find out it's me destroying me. So I can live backwards, doing what I want. I got to ask myself if that really takes me where I really want to go. Does that really take me where I really want to go? Self-will, doing what I want, when I want. Sometimes I'm like, just being honest. Or I get to accept spiritual help. This I do because I honestly want to, and I'm willing to make the effort, which means I'm willing to work at it. I'm willing to take the actions. What is the spiritual action of that, right? Sometimes it means I have to put pen to paper and do a 10-step on paper. Sometimes it means I have to call somebody and practice step 10 and talk to them about where I was selfish or self-centered or full of fear. It always looks different, and God continues to guide me. I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. What that means to me is I have to quit assigning you roles and telling you what you need to do in my head, because I may not say it out loud. You at least taught me some manners here. But my problem is in my head. I'm delusional. I still can find myself in the position where I can't tell the truth from the false, because my problem is those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. That is the problem with me. The main problem of the alcoholic is in her mind, not in her body. Because I lie to myself about myself, first about alcohol, and then about everything else, right? I lie to myself about myself. That is the problem with me still today. Because not only do I lie to myself about myself, I believe them over much good evidence to the contrary. Don't do this, Erica. Don't go that way. Oh, I got a better idea. Thanks for offering that, but that good intuitive thought there. But I think I got a better way. Oh, my Lord. So what happens when I'm in self is that I assign you roles in my head, and I have this judgment against you. I think my will is my thought life, my judgment. I can turn that over to God, where I no longer consider what is right or wrong, good or bad, right? That's God's business, not my business. That's a management decision. I'm no longer in management. So it's God's business what's good or bad, right or wrong, which means I can't judge you anymore, right? I have this judgment machine that lives inside of me. It's quieter than it used to be, but it's still active. You know, it's still, I don't even have to put a quarter in it. It just happens automatically. And so what happens is I judge you and I have an idea. You know, the man of 30 fell victim to a belief. He had a thought and it killed him. He fell victim to a belief. Isn't that what we do? Fall victim to a belief. We have an idea and we go with it. And it destroys things in our life. It destroys relationships. So I have a judgment about you. That was wrong. I don't like that. You shouldn't do that. And then I punish myself by feeling bad all day and being mad at you. That makes a lot of sense. It's stupid. But I do it because I'm right. And man, I've been asked so many times by so many people that have, you know, my sponsor, my people that have helped me with the traditions, Erica, why do you have such a need to be right? You might want to look at that. And I've prayed about it a lot, and I've sat with it, not trying to know the answer, you know. And it's because of this. I don't want to give my will and my life over the care of God, really. I really think I have a better idea. It's a lie, but I'm willing to go with it. You know, I'm willing to try to destroy my life. So I'm willing to suffer to think something is true that is not. And I'm willing to ruin my day around that. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I had to quit assigning roles. I have to practice that, which means when I notice, I turn to God. I just had an experience Wednesday night, and Tom, my friend Tom, starts talking to my husband about smoking cigars. I'm like, oh my God, quit talking to him about smoking cigars. And he says, you know, you have a good husband. You should be nice to him, you know. You should really, and he's saying this stuff. And I said, I'll be nice to him if you will bleep, quit talking to him about smoking cigars. And then I'll be nice to you too, and I won't hurt you. And, you know, and I just... I got, and it's funny, and I was kind of joking. I love Tom. I love him with my whole heart, and I love my husband with my whole heart. But there, I got on the inside, you know, and something started, that spring started to turn on the inside. And I will tell you right now that I am the only one in my life that can intervene on behalf of God. I am it. You cannot save me. I'm the only one that can turn. I can turn away, or I can turn towards. And I kind of went with that for a little bit, a couple hours, and then I went, oh my gosh, I am in such fear. Not only am I in self-centeredness, I am in such fear. I'm not consciously aware of what this fear is. So I said the fear prayer. God, please remove this fear. Whatever this is, it's underneath this. I don't need to know. I don't need to understand what's going on for God to heal me, right? I don't need to know. Trust me, I know too much. If it's coming from here, from something I learned 2 months ago, 2 years ago, 15 years ago, and I start throwing it at my life today, it's coming from my intellect, the transformative power of God is not there. We have to start to live by intuitive thought, intuitive nature, which means it's coming from God, not from Erica's wisdom box that I've gained along the way. You know, and that's my experience. If I'm talking to you out of here, there's no soul in it. You know, and it's empty, and you can feel that. But when we're talking out of here, we have that language of the heart, and we know what we're talking about, right? So I said the prayer, and I did my 11th step that night, and what God, please, you know, show me what corrective measures. And I woke up in the morning, and the thought came, oh, I guess it's not your business if your husband smokes cigars. And it was like, oh, it's really not my business. And I was just okay. It's just not my business. I don't have to like it, and I don't have to approve of it. I don't approve of it. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I am a recovered alcoholic, but I'm not entirely well. I'm weller than I've ever been. We can claim spiritual progress. So I love it that we have the third step promises, and we get an opportunity here to move into a way of living. If you're here, you have no idea where you're going, and I don't care if you're 2 days sober, 10 years sober, 20, 30, 40 years sober. I don't care. You don't know where you're going here. We don't know where God's going to take us. That is the nature of the third step.
We say, as you wish. You know, my life is no longer my business who brings me, what God brings to me, what God takes away from me, it's no longer my business. My conduct is my business. How I act is my business. I love working the step with people, with the women that I work with. I love the honor and the privilege of working with the women that I sponsor. Because when we go through this step, we get over here to the prayer, and we there's themes in this book, working with others. One of the most important themes. We do all of this to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Because I cannot transmit something I don't have, which means I will transmit what I do have. Right? So in working with them, I just had the privilege of doing this on the way up the down here from Iowa, on the phone with a gal, and she had been sitting with it for a week or two, and we got to review this and talk about what it really means to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. And then I take them right into the inventory work and get them to make a list. Call me back, right? Call me when you've made your list. My husband says, if you call me in 2 weeks, call somebody else. He doesn't really mean that, but the point is, make the list. Take the action. What else do you got to do? Right? It's like when we think we don't have time to pray in the morning. Would you go to work without brushing your hair or your teeth or putting on some clothes, getting out of your pajamas? No. But it's much more important that I'm on solid spiritual ground in the morning and I have an idea of the way I would like my day to go, meaning aligning my will with God's will rather than doing my own thing. And this gal who was, you know, a couple years, she used to be a great grand sponsee of mine, and then her sponsor left AA. She's still sober, but she just isn't in AA, but that really messed up her sponsees, and she ended up taking pills, and I spoke at a conference in November with my husband and started working with her late November, and she got off pills December 6th, and we've been working together since then, and she texted me last night and said, I got my list done. Day and a half. And thank God. I love working with women I sponsor. They teach me so much about myself. I see myself. They come to me with these things when they ask them to sit with these things, the questions that you've given me. And they amaze me. I watch the power of God. You do not want to miss this deal. This is the best deal in town, man. Tom said, I got nothing to bargain with. You gave me a life. I had no life. I was so manipulative, self-centered. I was so good at it. It just was a part of who I was, you know. Now at least I have, God can show me that I have a moment, that I can have an observer on board, that I have a little bit of space between me and the reaction. I used to be just the reaction where I am the anger, I am the judgment, I am the fear, and I get it all over you. And and I didn't have any protection from that, right? Now you've shown me how to have conscious contact with God, which is very different than belief about God. Bill talks about belief in, dependence upon. Two totally different worlds. I can sit on my butt all day long and believe and nothing is going to change. Dependence upon God is about what I'm doing throughout my day, right? What am I doing throughout my day? So, I think my time's up. Okay, thanks.
Cool, the microphone's open. We have a few minutes left, so please feel free to share your experience.
Hi, my name is Jan. I'm an alcoholic and a grateful member of Al-Anon. Really glad to be here this weekend, and thank you to the panels. We heard some awesome, awesome sharing this morning. I got up to get here at 8:30 this morning. That's how much I love the third step, because I'm not a morning person. The third step for me, there's a line in the big book, and I don't like to criticize the big book, and especially not here, but there's a line, and I know where it came from, but It says, "Thy will, not mine, be done." And that line does not work for me, because the idea of "thy will, not mine" means that there's a conflict, means that it's black or white, that it's God's will or my will, and, you know, never the two shall meet. And what I had to do when I took the third step was I had to align my will with God's will. So it's like I had spent my life, you know, with God's will going this way, and I was going this way with, you know, just butting into everything that came my way. And so when I took the third step, when I made that decision, I just changed the direction so that I was aligned with God's will. And, you know, I still get off course, but for the most part, that's what I try to do. The way I look at the third step is that it's I live for God, and that my goal is to cooperate with God. So I try to be a little bit softer about the third step. And I didn't get the third step at all until I got to the seventh step. When I went through the steps the first time, I was going through the motions. I didn't believe this stuff was going to work. I thought you guys were all lunatics. And I really, really was just going through the motions because I really desperately wanted to stay sober. But I didn't think it was going to work. I thought it was a bunch of gobbledygook. And so by the time I got to the seventh step, I had formed a relationship with a higher power, which wasn't in my, you know, that's not what I intended to do, but I loved it. And I loved that feeling of ease and comfort that I got. So thanks again to the panel. I'm really glad to be here. Glad you're all here too.
Hi there, my name is Mary Thier, alcoholic. Thanks, you guys, it was very powerful. Thanks. I'm reminded with the third step, I've had a couple of feelings or thoughts go through my mind about how our late and great Don Pritz used to say, we're here to do God's work, not his job. And the first time I heard him say that, I thought, that's brilliant. But it took me quite a few years to understand how that applied to me. And where it says that in the third step, the first thing we have to do is playing God. When I'm playing God, I realize that I'm looking for the outcome. Now that's God's job. I'm here to do the work. Just do the drill, as one member used to say in my home group in Maine. I just do the drill. God knows the outcome. I'm not supposed to be, you know, in my mind trying to figure that out. Second thing that came to me was I used to say that, and I thought the same thing, somebody said it was backwards. Why do they say afterwards that you think clearly? You know, and then also it's something about the fact that, you know, you should take it with someone that would understand and they name this stuff. Well, I never thought anybody would understand, so it took me years before I actually did it with someone. And when I did it with something, someone else, it was a powerful thing for me, and it continues to be for me every time I do it. But in that prayer, because I was so crazy, the only line I really heard was, take away my difficulties, because I'd be crazy. I'd be just going, all right, just take it away. And I thought it said, now I didn't do this consciously, but unconsciously I kind of did it this way, take away my difficulties so I can better do my will. It didn't say that. It just didn't say that. But I, you know, in hindsight, in really looking at that, that's why I'm so clear that I have to have a God that's a friend, that really loves me. Because I won't, if I don't have that, I can't do that step. Thanks.
Actually, ma'am, we have 2 minutes left if you want to come up and share.
My name is Janet. I am an alcoholic. And thank you all. It was really good for me to be here. And, you know, I've been reflecting on this whole God thing lately and how it's playing in my life at the moment. And, you know, in my sobriety, this changes. Some days I can just go with it and be good, and then sometimes there's things that happen in my life that are things that are happening like right now, and I have such a hard time. And so, you know, my questions today are, God's will. Okay, so I've got this situation, and do I sit back and just say, okay, it's God's will, or do I look at the Serenity Prayer and do I say, okay, I need to march forth and try to do what's put in front of me, the next right thing, to try to help this situation that's happening in my life. So at what point do I just sit back and say, okay, this is God's will, and at what point do I try to do everything that I can possibly do to not lay down like a doormat? And for me, this has been a struggle in my sobriety with the third step. And you know, I loved what you said, because from the Iowa girl, because here's how it is for me. My will, my situation is between Colorado and New Jersey. My will is to go to New Jersey with the guns blaring and say, what the hell is going on here? And God's will is to say, there are steps you need to take. There's slowly but surely, there are people you need to call. There are things you need to do. You need to trust the process, but you need to get off your butt and do certain things. And so for me, today, it's kind of a struggle. I'm in a struggle. And I know in my heart that I need to let go of the struggle. I need to do the next right thing. And sometimes this is how the third step works for me. You know, I need to do the next right thing, not just sit back. So thank you all. I needed some clarity today. And I hope maybe for the moment I've got it. And that could change in another minute from now, so watch out. If you see me walking along and I got this look on my face, just kind of do this and move away, because you never know what's coming out. And so I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who participated. By group conscience, Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that the entire conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experiences and strengths with each other so that we may grow together in greater understanding and love.
Perfect timing.
Absolutely.